You're listening to Face Off, episode 61, recorded March 21st, 2010. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com. So we actually have a special treat this week. Rather than doing sort of the normal grind of the show, we were actually fortunate enough to get an interview with Steve Bristol of Less Everything.
Yeah, and I think you guys will enjoy the interview, and so here we go.
All right, today we have a very special guest. We actually have a Steve Bristol, who is the co-founder of Less Everything and programmer extraordinaire. Steve, thank you for being on the show. First, I want to say I really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for having me, guys.
So why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do to start off?
Sure. So I run a company called Less Everything, and we have a few products of our own. Our biggest one is something called lessaccounting.com, which, as you might well imagine, is an accounting application. Mm-hmm. We also have a time tracking application called Less Time Spent, and a project management software called Less Projects. Along with that, we do a consultancy where we help other people make great products.
Cool. We talked about Less Accounting in one of our episodes, and I use it personally. And
yeah, we've actually talked about the whole suite before, which is why we're really glad to get you on the show, because you guys have done some pretty amazing stuff. I'm really impressed with your story, from what I can decipher.
Thank
of it.
You.
But why don't you tell us a little bit of the history behind Less Everything and you and your cohort, Alan?
Sure. So my business partner's name is he's Alan Branch, and he's a designer. And I'm a developer, so it's that type of team here or pair. We actually met several years ago when I was moving to Jacksonville, Florida. And I was wondering who was doing Rails development work in Jacksonville. So I Googled for Ruby on Rails in Jacksonville, and Alan came up as one of the two search results. And so I went to Alan's website, and he had a company called Speedy Media Group doing consulting. He was a consultant building websites for folks using Rails. But since his sister used to live in Jacksonville, he was SEOing for Jacksonville, even though he lived in Birmingham, Alabama. And so I sent him an email. It's like, according to your website, you're not in Jacksonville, but I searched for Jacksonville, and I asked him what he was doing. And so he put me to work on – I was doing – this was before we started Less, and I was doing a 40-hour-a-week contracting actually with the city of Jacksonville at the time. So we got to talking, and I kind of jumped in on one of his projects, and helped him out a bit. The project was a bit in trouble, and so I kind of got it back on track. And some of the things that he liked about me right away that kind of set me apart from other developers he had worked with was that I could kind of I could give him real feedback about features and about UI and that sort of thing, and actually have good UI ideas as opposed to just most developers really aren't that terribly good at UI. And the feedback I would give him on features would be things like, I can certainly do this feature for you, but it's going to cost you a lot more. Why don't we do it like this? Or why don't we push it off to a later iteration? And I was the first developer that he ever came across that was actually concerned about getting the project done, getting things done on budget, making sure that we didn't do extra stuff that the client wasn't paying for, because then that obviously comes out of Alan's pocket. So we kind of got to talking, and when that project wrapped up, and he went on doing his thing, and shortly thereafter, we decided to work on Less Accounting together and just kind of see where that goes. And so we started that project, and initially it started off as an expense tracker, not as a full-blown accounting package, and eventually grew into that. But then in January 2007, I opened Less basically just as a web consultancy, and almost immediately started hiring things out to Alan's company, things that need design work. And we started talking, you know, pretty early on about, you know, maybe one day in 6 months or something, if this kind of relationship goes back and forth and continues, maybe we'll merge companies or something like that. And obviously we're already working on Les County together. And so I think it was February that year. I think it was very quickly, and we actually decided to become partners at that time. And so Alan closed up his business. He sent me a check for with all the money in his bank account, and became a founding member of Les.
Wow!
And
wow.
We've been together ever since.
It's cool.
Great.
So you mentioned Ruby on Rails a lot. Did you? I mean, you've been a developer for a while. Did you start off with another mm-hmm. language, or I mean?
Yeah, I've been writing software professionally for about 13 or 14 years now.
Wow.
Yeah, I know I'm old. I know. But I started off kind of in Microsoft technologies doing, I mean, I started off with HTML and JavaScript and that sort of thing, and then progressed into ASP and then VB and, you know, Access databases, SQL Server, that sort of thing. Eventually went to C++ on Linux, did some Java, you know, PHP and Perl along the way, and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, went through the whole .NET thing. And but I guess it was in 2005 I is when I found Rails and started working with Rails. And then I guess in 2007 when I opened Les, I haven't been back to any other languages really ever since then.
Did Rails help you have that workflow where you could say, do you want this iteration? Do you want this feature? That workflow that Alan liked? Was Rails a big contributor for that, or?
I don't think Rails had much to do with that. With you know the us become, you know, either me individually or us as a team becoming more and more agile, if you want to use that dreaded word. Mm-hmm. I mean, Rails obviously lets you do things very easily and lets you iterate it lets you take things out and put things in very easily. But it doesn't necessarily make you more agile than any other technology. I mean, that's more how you want to do work, how what your process is. Mm-hmm. And Rails is almost irrelevant in that regard.
So do you, now that you guys, you kind of mentioned that you have, you know, you guys have a lot of core products that you work on, but mm-hmm. you also are doing a lot of consultant work.
Yep.
Are you guys doing more internal, like less product development or client services these days?
So for about, at least a year now, if not a little bit more, we've been doing more internal work than client work. The reason for the client work has always been simply to support the product work. Mm-hmm. We want to be our own company and do our own products, be our own product company. And not have to really, you know, do client work, not have to do client work. We think we always want to do some client work, mm-hmm. Because all of our products are geared towards freelancers and small businesses. And so we think if we stop doing product work, we'll probably stop using our own products.
Yeah.
And we think that's kind of just stupid. But at that point, you know, we might do one product at a time, as opposed to, you know, or one client at a time, as opposed to like a bunch of things. We might do some things for nonprofits or who knows what. But the goal has always been to get to the point of the product supporting the company 100%. And, you know, we're completely bootstrapped and we're profitable by on day one, as every consultancy should be. So it's just been a matter of growing the user base and the feature set on Les County and the other products until they get to the point of actually supporting the whole company. Right now, we're about 40% or so supported by the products.
That's great.
Yeah, so we're getting there.
So, like Les County and some of these projects that you've done, are they a means to scratch your own itch and you know, be a means
Absolutely.
To, you know, help you with your client services that you're providing?
Well, I mean, they weren't for client services, but, you know, immediately the reason we wanted to do the expense tracker, which became Les Accounting, was because that was of the – so Alan had a list of ideas, of things that he thought would be, good ideas to build, as did I. And one of the things that was on both of our lists was an expense tracker. And it was something that we both needed kind of as consultants. You know, he was running his own business full-time. I was doing contract work part-time. And so we both needed some way to kind of – track expenses. And so the concept of, and it's one of the things we recommend a lot when people ask what should I build, is we recommend building something that you're going to use, that you need. Because if you need it, then, you know, not only do other people need it, but, you know, you'll probably do a better job at building it because you'll know exactly what the pitfalls are. It's not some, you know, abstract concepts. It's a very, very real thing to you that you're using it every day.
Yeah, there's a lot of success with Google products. I mean, I think about like Gmail, how that was just like, man, email sucks. I want to make email better.
Yeah, Google's got some. I mean, you know, Gmail's a great example of you know, something that's very, very innovative. The UI and the way they made it better. And it probably did develop. I mean, surely by somebody who's just said, you know, someone at Google said, God, Gmail, you know, Google's email sucks, and wanted to make it better, scratching their own itch.
So why don't you tell us a little bit more? You kind of hit on how you guys, you guys work together. But what else is some of the other, you know, unique or just really cool things about the Less Everything culture, about your guys' attitudes and philosophies?
Sure. Sure. So I'll say, first of all, that it's not just Alan and I, that we do have a few developers working for us and a few support personnel. One of the things we did in the last several months is on Less Accounting, we switched everyone who does support on Less Accounting. We used to do it ourselves and have all the developers do it. And then Alan had this brilliant idea of, why don't we just hire some bookkeepers to do it? and it's actually gone really, really well. So now when you get tech support from Less Accounting, it's actually a real, you know, real live bookkeeper who's actually helping you.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, it's Alan is just fucking brilliant. I mean, he's got these, you would never know to look at him. He's like 6'4" and he's like 5 feet wide. And you know, he actually went to college on a football scholarship. You'd never guess that he's, you know, some like dainty designer, but he's just so brilliant. He looks like, you know, kind of like a ruffian, but he's so brilliant and so smart and talented that, it's just a pleasure and a joy to work with the guy. And he comes up with these great ideas, like that, for example. So we've got some bookkeepers working support. We've got some guys scattered around the world, writing code with us. And so the first thing that's unique about Less, and I guess it's not terribly unique anymore, but still unique enough, is that we don't actually have an office. Everybody works from wherever they want to work, wherever they're most productive, and allows us to be kind of really easygoing and laid back. And it really gets us into this mindset of, not being clock watchers and not really worrying about, you know, how many hours is any one person working. You know, just we really focus on, are we getting stuff done? Are we moving towards our goals? Is everybody happy? That sort of thing. And I think as a company culture, that's you know, maybe pretty unique. No one punches a clock. In fact, we hired somebody recently, and he was asking me about some holiday that he's in Costa Rica, and he asked me about some holiday they have in Costa Rica, and can he have time off? How does holidays work at Less? I'm like, dude, I don't really give a fuck. I just really honestly, I don't want to know. If you're not going to work a couple of days, just let us know, and then, you know, make sure your work's done, and that's as involved as I want to get in planning your schedule, you know. I think that some of the other things we do differently is, you know, we think that pretty much everything sucks, which, I mean, it sounds arrogant, right? And snobbish, and to a certain extent it is, right? I mean, you kind of have to be a little bit arrogant and a little bit of a snob to take that approach. But we just look at things and try and see that you know, how much extra stupid stuff there is. So we've got this friend who's trying to relaunch his website, and it's a PHP site, and it was originally one of these. I don't know if you know this, but in the PHP world, you can actually buy out of the box websites, which kind of like Loved by Less. I mean, they're basically full websites, and then you can just brand them and do whatever you want. And yeah. They have, like, you know, pretty extensive control panels and all kinds of features. And for what he did a redesign recently, and just before this launch, and he asked our opinion of it. And, you know, Alan and I are individually going through it, And ultimately the biggest problem with it was that there's just too many features. You know, it's just for what his site does and for the initial launch, it's just like, just comment out all those links, you know. Yeah. You just don't need all that stuff. So I think that's pretty different. Most people think that the way to make something better is to add something, and we think the way to make something better is to take something away. In fact, just yesterday we're about to launch the website for LessConf, for this year's LessConf, and we're pretty late. I mean, we should have launched it 2 months ago, but we've been pretty busy and blah, blah, blah. But Alan had the whole thing. I finally saw it yesterday for the first time. And Alan has the whole fucking site boiled down to a one-page website, right? Which is brilliant, right? It really doesn't need to be any more than one page. But I'm just thinking about, you know, that how many people are going to look at this and think, wow, am I really going to spend $400 or $500 on, you know, on uh-huh. going to this conference when the website's only one page, right? And so I'm telling Alan, I'm like, you know, okay, so I think you should click on a speaker and it should take you to a speaker's page. He's like, well, look at every other conference website, right? The speaker's page has almost nothing. And I'm like, yeah, there's not a lot to tell, right? But that's what we should do. And Alan's like, yeah, well, I appreciate your opinion. I don't think he's going to take my opinion and on this one. And I'm fine with it. I mean, it's really his thing. So he can do whatever he wants. But and ultimately, he's right. It doesn't need to be more than that. But I think it's that kind of thing, right? Where Alan, I don't think he's going to bend to my opinion or you know, and we'll find out if I'm right. You know, I mean, if that's actually going to hurt ticket sales or not. But so just that concept that it doesn't need to be more, so we're not going to make it more. I think that's pretty unique.
What are some of the things that you recommend people coming to you for consulting and things like removing features? What other things do you recommend for people that are starting out and trying to build out their apps?
I mean, I think that for most people, that changing that mindset is so hard that it's easier for them to just let go of control and say, okay, I'm going to trust you guys. You know, and so we have a lot of clients that come to us and they have these ideas and we talk to them and we whittle it down and this and that. And there's just things that they don't want to let go of. But ultimately, most of the clients are using us because they like us and they believe in us. And so they kind of just say, okay, I'm just, you know, at the end of the argument is like, okay, I'm just going to trust you guys. I know you guys know what you're doing. And so we think that's, we like to work with people that think that we're good, that think that we have a good opinion rather. Mm-hmm. You know, people with big budgets are always great, but we'd much rather work with someone with not a lot of money who's able to put something good out there rather than someone that wants to put crap out there. I mean, a great example of this was a client we worked with, I guess this was about a year and a half ago, and they had a medium quality idea for a website. I mean, there were already websites out there that were like this, and they weren't really doing anything new or fantastic. And so the idea itself was they're already starting off with kind of shaky ground, right? Mm-hmm. And we went through about 6 iterations of planning with these people of just, you know, they had this, you know, these gigantic ideas of all of these features. And then, you know, Alan would spend hours on the phone and hack the shit out of it. And they'd be like, okay, great. We're going to do less. We're going to do, you know, this little thing. And then the other partner would get on the phone and it would grow and grow and grow. After about the 6th iteration, we're finally like, okay, we're done. Let's sign the contract, and we're just reviewing the feature set before signing the contract, and it was starting all over again. And finally, I just told him, I said, you know what, I think that we're going to be able to build a website that we're going to be happy with, but I don't think we'll be able to build one that you're going to be happy with. And so we didn't work with them. In the end, we said it was just too philosophically, it was just too much of a disconnect.
Huh.
And we'd rather, and because you know, we've been pretty fortunate that we haven't had to do a lot of sales and a lot of going out and trying to find clients, mm-hmm. Which has allowed us to be, you know, a little bit picky. And a lot of people, of course, don't have that luxury. But having that luxury, at least having it at times, has allowed us to be able to say no to clients and say no to projects that we thought that we wouldn't be able to do the way we wanted to do them. Mm-hmm. I think a great example is Pivotal Tracker, right? So you guys use Pivotal Tracker, you've seen it?
Yeah.
So this is a really great product, and the guys at Pivotal did a really awesome job with it, right? But it's really for, I think, a lot of people that use it with their clients, right? Their clients are in Pivotal Tracker, they invite their clients to use it, and their clients are getting in there and doing iterations with them. And we think that's great, except that it's not, right? It really sucks, right? At least it sucks for us. Because we don't really want to go through the iterations with the clients, right? We don't really want because ultimately, you know, to do that, we'd have to charge the client double, I think, because it's just too annoying, right?
Yeah.
We want to go through a nice you know, first iteration planning phase, kind of get a really good idea of what the client wants, and then have the client go away until we're almost at the end. You know, which is probably 2 to 4 weeks, right, for a first iteration. Huh. Generally, the first iteration is 2 weeks, but you know, for many projects, it's as much as four. I don't think we would do a first iteration that was larger than 4 weeks at this point, because you do get into some real problems. But mm-hmm. You know, for a 4 week first iteration, for example, you know, I think that you know, we want to talk to the client about week three. You know, we want to be done with just about everything, showing the client, knowing that full well that we're going to be moving some things around, or we're going to be changing some verbiage, and we're going to be, you know, changing some things, and that's okay. But to have the client with us every week or every 2 weeks or something is going to, I think it doesn't give us enough time to breathe creatively and to do the best that we can do. And so we really want to work with clients that believe in us and that like our philosophy and that think that, you know, that have the faith that we're going to do a good job for them, and that as we're coding, we're not looking at the clock and we're not worried about how much time we're taking and, you know, where the bottom line of this project is going to wind up. But what we're really worried about is, you know, are we doing the best that we can do, you know, in this first iteration.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's really important. I think a lot of people have a hard time with this, is managing their clients as well, because, and I think a lot of clients out there aren't learning that this is the way it should be done, because people won't manage, you know, they're just so concerned with, rightfully so sometimes, you know, I got to get food on the table, but sometimes like saying, you know, we're not going to be able to do this the way you want, and it's just going to end up being a hassle for both of us, and cutting loose and saying, you got to find someone else is something a lot of people won't do. And that's great that you guys will stick to your guns like that.
Yeah, well, I mean, otherwise we might as well go work for someone else, right?
Yeah, totally.
I mean, the whole point of doing our own business is to have fun and to do it our way. And then again, that sounds, you know, arrogant, and I think that you know, we do a good job for most of our clients. We certainly do a good job for us. When clients come to us and they ask us for, you know, examples of work we've done, we always point them to our own apps, not to other client projects we've done. And you know, basically, if the client is happy with what we've done for ourselves, more than likely they'll be happy with what we do for them.
All right, so let's get into some a little more technical stuff, if we can, if you don't mind.
Absolutely.
So you are a core Rails contributor, correct?
Yeah.
All right. So what should we be excited about in Rails 3? I mean, we heard a lot about Rails 3, but what does that mean for a lot of us?
Jesus, you know, I haven't, let me think about Rails 3. What are the things that the whole scoping thing and the way that the active model stuff is changing. I don't know if you guys have seen Pratik's blog post about this, but there's all of the finders and all of the named scopes and all that stuff is changing. It's going to be much more malleable. And it's almost like a query language of its own, like a DSL for a query language, which I'm not a fan of in general. But the way this is put together, I actually think is going to be kind of pretty cool. So I think that's cool that's coming up. What else? I think there's some significant performance improvements that are coming up. I think Yehuda and Carl have worked pretty hard on getting that stuff faster. I think the notion of active model, where you know, you can swap out active record or what's the other one called? I'm totally blanking. Yehuda's thing, the where you define where you don't have migrations and you define everything inside the model itself, all the columns, everything.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Right. Anyway, so you can swap out those things relatively straightforward, which actually makes it nice and easy to write your own adapters for anything else. For example, you could have like an API that you're using, and you could just write a small adapter layer that then calls the API, and so long as it conforms to the spec, then all that stuff is still seamless in your code. You can call it transparently. And it also means that it should make it really easy to use a lot of the NoSQL stuff, because again, you just have to conform to the the protocol there, the few methods that are required. So I think those are some things that are going to be pretty pretty cool. I guess they're the routes have been rewritten yet again. It seems like every time someone joins the core team, the first thing they do is rewrite the router. But this one conforms more to the way MERB does things, so you should have some extra fanciness in your routes, which I generally try to keep my routes pretty simple, so I'm not terribly excited about that. That won't be much of a change for me, other than the I don't know if you know about that. I wrote a JavaScript plugin which gives you named routes in your in JavaScript. And so it's called LessJS Routes. And so that'll all have to be rewritten because the internals of the router are changing. Yeah, I think there's some interesting things coming up that should be a lot of fun.
Do you guys follow any agile kind of methodologies with like test-driven development or?
Yeah, I mean, so I'll just comment on agile. I'll give you like two seconds of my okay. tirade on agile and why agile sucks.
Let us have it.
So agile is really cool, right? I mean, there's lots of really cool parts to agile, and we certainly do some of our process. We're very, you know, it's very agile. But the problem I have with the agile community, and certainly the marketing term agile, is that it tends to wind up being mostly a marketing term, right? Most consultancies wind up using, you know, convincing a customer to go with them because they're agile. Mm-hmm. Because they don't have any merits of their own to speak of, you know. So all they can say is, "Yeah, we have a really good process. We have an agile process, and that's why you should go with them." But that doesn't really separate them from anyone else. I mean, Who gives a fuck what your process is, right? I mean, ultimately, from a client's perspective, money and the end result are what matter.
Yeah,
right?
Totally.
So, so I think on our homepage, I think we have somewhere it says something. We use the agile, I think, once somewhere, maybe. Whereas, you know, you look at many other web consultancies or in Rails consultancies specifically, and that's all they talk about is agile. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's a marketing term. But the thing I don't like about the way people use agile or how agile is kind of used in the Rails world, at least, is that they've basically replaced one set of really fucked up and stupid rules with another set of fucked up and stupid rules, right? Which isn't to say that all of Agile is bad or perhaps any of Agile is bad, but simply going by a stupid set of rules is terrible. I think the main point of Agile was, here are some really, really good ideas, and what you should do is you should find the process that's best for your people, right? Mm-hmm. I think right at the beginning of the manifesto it says people over process, right? And so that's the kind of Agile that I really like and that you never, ever hear about. Is the agile about it talks about this is my shop, these are my people, and this is what works for my people. And so we do a subset of agile and we do our own kind of thing and we do what works for our people and our clients. And that tends to not follow a lot of the agile stuff. Mm-hmm. So for example, we think pair programming is really good until you get your training wheels off, right? And then there are certain parts of code that are really helpful and really nice to pair on, right? Things when you don't understand or things that you're scared of because you're looking at someone else's code and there are no tests, so you just freaked out because everything you do is going to break something else, right? Mm-hmm. Or just really complicated algorithms when it's just nice to have someone else there. But for the majority of work, it's just a waste of time to have two people writing the same code. I mean, if 80% of the website is some form of restfulness, crudliness, you know, do you really need someone else sitting there next to you coding with you? Maybe you do. I don't think you do. I certainly don't. And so if that's an example of a portion of Agile that, I'm not a big fan of, but we do some parts. There are some things we do that are very much agile. We wrote less projects because the way we do iterations is very agile, and so less projects is an iterative software task management tool. And so basically, when you come in, you create your one or two iterations, and then you start setting up specs or tasks for each iteration. And the whole point of the software is to make it super easy to move tasks to different iterations. And so there's a sticky notes view, which is actually what you would see if you had all of your stories or specs or tasks on sticky notes on your wall, and how easy it is to move them around. And you can change the state and change who things are assigned to and that sort of thing on each story or spec. And we work very much like that. We were very big believers in having smaller iterations. And that comes mainly from having projects that are, you know, basically one gigantic iteration kind of fail at the end. Because and fail as in we didn't meet, you know, it's not like we didn't finish it or it didn't work. It turned out to not be the right thing, right?
Yeah, totally.
We're certainly agile in that respect. Our process is very much, but you know, another place where we're not agile is we're not agile in as I said before, in asking for customer or client feedback, you know, kind of throughout the process. Mm-hmm. We think that you know, every 2 weeks or every 4 weeks at the end of every iteration is pretty much the right time to get that feedback and to get that involvement, not throughout. So I know a lot of Rails shops that do try and get their clients way more involved than that. What else? I guess, you know, maybe in conversation, I'll think of some other examples where we are or are not agile.
You know, I think that's a really, really awesome point of view though. I like that you have these views that you really believe in. Like, you know, why should, you know, if the process doesn't work for the people, why, you know, even though it's agile, I can get a book that gives me an agile process. If it doesn't work for your people, what's the point, right? Do what works best to make people productive and let them have fun to do cool things at work.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's ultimately the problem with enterprise software and with Waterfall, right? Is that the focus in when you're doing, you know, a more enterprise or a Waterfall process is to make your people not accountable, right? Is to make it so that, you know, people are like are completely replaceable, and you can just pull one out and plop another one in. Oh, you have more features, we'll just, you know, plop 7 more developers in and you'll be good mm-hmm. to go. And you know, we think the exact opposite. We think that the process is not relevant at all. That the only thing that matters is people and personalities and what works best for everyone. So every time we add someone to the team or that someone, you know, leaves the team, you know, we fully expect the process to change. You know, and that, which doesn't mean it will. But we have an expectation that it might, and that if it does, then that's great, because it should change. It should change to meet the needs and to make it better for everyone. And so, we do a daily stand up about once a week, and maybe twice. But it's, you know, it's no kind of regular thing. Some weeks we'll do it five days, but there's no regular kind of thing. There's no set time. But one of the things we talk about, you know, regularly, once a month maybe or so, is process. And, you know, hey, we're finding a problem with this, with communication, with this and that. You know, how do we want to solve it? And the most recent one was that we were interrupting each other too much. And it was really me that was like, fuck, I just can't get anything done because it's a constant stream of interruptions. and Alan was a gigantic culprit. He you know, Alan he love, you know, he'll video you, he'll jump on IM, you know, whatever. And so we really spent a lot of time talking with each team member as a group and a little bit individually, but really just trying to find out, how do you guys want to work? And many of us actually wanted to switch to email, like, to that, hey, if you have a question for me and it doesn't matter, send me an email, you know, and I'll get mm-hmm. to it when I can. But Alan is an inbox zero monster. And so he didn't want to do email at all, because to him that's a gigantic interruption. Because once that email comes in, he has to deal with it so that he can get back to work.
Yeah, I know how he feels.
Yeah, right. And so, right. Whereas me, like I like inbox zero too, but I'm okay with inbox three for like 4 days in a row, right? And then, you know, and by the end of the day, it might be inbox 16, and then I'll whittle it down the next morning or something, you know. Yeah. Just so long as I'm really around that, you know, zero to seven mark, I'm really okay.
Yeah.
And so we went back and forth, and we said, well, let's try this and let's try that. But it was really everyone's input about how we're going to do the process, how we're going to change that process so that everyone can be more productive. And no one person's feedback outweighed anyone else's. You know, it was really very much a team effort and a team perspective.
That's really cool. So I want to move on real quick if we can to the last things. I'm really, really pumped about this. This is when I really became interested in you guys a lot more. Was I heard about Les
the naked
Kolff.
Pictures? Is that what it was?
Well, that and the video of the beard scratching, because I'm a very hairy man as well, and so I love getting myself scratched. So,
That was Alan, right?
Alan yeah. He's like, I need an intern for this, and I was like, I want a beard scratching intern too. But actually, I want to talk about Les Kolff. You guys, this last year, the first Les Kolff, correct?
Yes.
You guys had an awesome panel of speakers.
Yep.
It looked really cool. I really wish we could have gone to it. It's one of the fortunate things of living in Montana, I guess, is it's hard to get to cool places like Jacksonville. But tell us a little bit about Les Kolff.
This year, it'll be in a cooler place. It'll be in Atlanta, so.
A little more northern, right?
Well, the nice thing about Atlanta, though, is it's no plane connections for anyone, right? Everyone has a direct flight to Atlanta.
Yeah,
that's right. Great. So that was one of the reasons we chose Atlanta. That was one of the requirements, was it had to be a major airport hub.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Because getting to Jacksonville is oftentimes, you know, at least through Atlanta.
Oh, okay. Right?
But yeah, so we did. So your question was just in general about Les Kolff, or specifically about anything?
No, just I mean, what really made you guys decide that you wanted to do a conference, and how do you go about doing it? You guys did it really quick, and I've heard nothing but good things about it. So I'm curious what spurred you guys to do it, and how you actually got to do it.
So there's a couple things. So first of all, I've wanted to do one for about. For at least a year before that, I was talking to Alan, we should do a conference. We should do a conference. It would be awesome. And I was like, no, no one would come. No one would come. I don't know when it was, but it was, I think it was, early summer or late spring of last year. I think maybe early summer, I went to and spoke at a conference in Seattle called Small and Special, which was put on by a design firm who happened to be Les County customers, and they asked me to speak. And it was just a fantastic small little conference, and I was so pumped. I mean, I speak at a lot of conferences, but I was so pumped that I called Alan, and you know, I was telling him how it went and this and that. And I was like, you know what, we really should do a conference. We have to do a conference. And Alan really started to kind of budge. And then shortly thereafter, or just before that, it was that same time frame. He had gone to a conference in Tampa, a design conference put on by Dan Denny. And it was like $100 and it was a phenomenally good conference, apparently. We'll certainly go this year. And I think between those two conferences, Alan finally got over whatever hump he had and said, you know, we can do this. And so finally we decided to do it. And the reason it was so fast is because it was already the end of the year, and we're looking at dates and who could do it, and we knew that if we didn't do it by like at least mid October, we'd have to wait till January. And in fact, I think October 17th, which is when we did it, was already kind of too late in the year. We should have done it 2 weeks earlier, but we didn't have the time. That was, and so you know, I think it was from 7 or 8 weeks from start to finish, and. We got an incredible lineup of people to come speak, and had a really good time doing it. This year, we decided to do it in the springtime, and so it's less than, which means you're either going to do it 6 months apart or a year and a half apart. And so, Alan loves doing it. He had so much fun organizing and just doing the whole thing. So we're doing it in May, and it's going to be a 2-day event this year, May 21st and 22nd. In Atlanta. If you go to leskolff.com, hopefully by the time you're hearing this, the website will be up. It should have been up 2 months ago. But it's going to be, I think the price is going to gradually increase. And I think that the tickets are starting out at like 400 or something. If you want to, although I think I'm meant to tweet out a coupon code right now, which by the time you're hearing this will no longer be good. But the interesting thing, though, is that the previous conference, we did it in, you know, 7 or 8 weeks. And obviously this conference we've been working on for months, and it's still 2.5 or so months away. I think less time is better than more time. I think this is another example of where less is better than more. Because when we only had that 7 or 8 weeks, you know, every day there was a high priority item that had to be done. If we don't do it today, the conference is not going to happen. And so everything got done. Whereas now that we have all this luxury of time, these high priority things, like the website get, you know, it just takes, you know, other things take precedence until you get around to them. And so I think having that pressure of time was quite, worked out well for us. I'll tell you, we're talking about doing a second conference this year towards the end of the year, doing a technical conference.
Yeah, that's what's cool about less conf is it's not like a programming conference. It's like really to me it encompasses everything that we try to talk about on this podcast. You know, entrepreneurship on the web, and also, you know, some development, but, you know, best practices and things. It seemed to incorporate a lot of, you know, good ideas. Just trying to get those ideas out.
Yeah, and the idea of left, you're absolutely right. It's really meant to be a business conference, you know, a conference that you'll be hearing people who have actually done something success. You know, you may not know who they are before you get there, but once you're there and you hear them speak, you'll see exactly what they did that made them successful, and be very inspirational and filled with good, you know, tons of good information and good how to's and just all kinds of stuff. It's not, LessConf is not at all technical. It's not for designers or developers, although designers and developers are totally welcome. And if they have any kind of entrepreneurial spirit, we'll definitely get a lot out of it.
Yeah, there's a lot of bleed over these days, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
So what's Less Cruise? Is that an extension okay. to LessConf? Yeah.
So Less Cruise is vacation.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, we're not making – so it was this thing, Alan – and again, it was an Alan idea. And he said, hey, let's go on a cruise. And we took our families on a cruise I think about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago. So Alan said, let's go on a cruise and let's invite a bunch of friends. And I was like, okay. And he's like, well, let's invite everybody. And I was like, okay. And so it's happening next month or in 3 weeks or something. It's not too late to buy tickets, but we're not making any money. So, you know, it's not like you're supporting us or anything like that. But if you go to lesscruise.com, you can find the phone number for the ticket agency. And it's leaving out of Miami on April 8th and through the 12th. And it's really just a good excuse to kind of chill out and have a vacation, but have a vacation with you know, new and interesting people, all people kind of like us. And so it should be a lot of fun.
The old bar camp at sea, huh?
Yeah. So that was not one of Alan's ideas, is that we should have, or maybe it was my idea that we should do a bar camp at sea. At this point, I totally don't want to do it. But I don't think I'm going to present at this, but it'll be we've got a room from the cruise if we want to use it for, because there's 1 day at sea. And if enough people want to do it, we'll do a bar camp at sea. And I was joking that I'll have number placards that I'll hold up like an Olympic event at the end of each talk. And it should just be a lot of fun.
That sounds really exciting. I wish I could go.
Well, it's not too late.
Not too late. Go buy tickets, everybody. LessCruise.com.
Go buy tickets.
So that's it. That's all we have for you, unless you have any questions for us or anything, Steve.
No, I don't. No, but thanks very much for having me.
Yeah, no, thank you. Really, I love hearing you talk about this stuff. You have very great ideas. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yep, definitely.
So there was Steve. Really cool interview. Really cool guy. I think he has some great viewpoints.
Definitely.
So thanks, guys, and we hope to have more interviews with some great guests like Steve in the future. And we will see you next week.